Are those of the individual speakers and callers and do not necessarily represent the views of KFAR Radio or any of our respective employees, affiliates, or sponsors of this program.
Welcome to Shooter's Corner, your program for conversation on guns, shooting, and your Second Amendment rights. Brought to you by Price RV, Auto Trim Design, by Rogers Auto Repair, and by Frontier Outfitters. Now, your host, Chuck Indereeden.
Good morning, Fairbanks, as you could probably tell. I'm not Chuck. I hope everyone is having a great day. It is currently 40 degrees outside, slightly overcast, not terrible. Could be worse. We had a little bit of rain the other day, but that is totally fine. If you have any questions, please call 458-TALK or 458-8255. You can also live stream should you ever be out of state or in a remote location with your Starlink at kfarradio.com. Click on the orange ball that shows Listen Live. You can also download the app, the KFAR app. Same thing. Go there, open up. You'll see that little orange ball. Click that, and you'll be able to listen to everything live. Let's get started with the show. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Freedom is not a bargaining chip. It is not a line item on a tax ledger. And it certainly is not a favor that politicians get to hand out when the timing suits them. Gun owners must take note. We must not allow this betrayal to go without consequence. All right, a few reminders. The Alaska Outdoor Mentorship Program will be on May 14th from 5:30 to 7 p.m. Or for any of our military folks, like Chuck likes to say, 1730 to 1900. It's going to be at the TBSA range, 1230 TBSA Way. This month's topic is choosing a rifle for your Alaska hunt. The presenter will be Gary Junk, a master gunsmith and the owner of Arctic Gunworks. We also have the TVSA memberships. Annual memberships are starting at $125. Annual family membership, $250. That's including your spouse and children under 18. Lifetime membership individually is $1,250, which we've said it multiple times before. That is a very worthwhile price, especially if you're an avid shooter, you like to go out. Now that the sun's coming out, you could still take some appreciation in being able to have an indoor range away from all the wildlife, mosquitoes, and unpleasantries you might find somewhere else. Annual membership for juniors is $35. Under 18, they must be accompanied by an adult member or as part of an approved program. Public shooting hours at the TBSA range are every Thursday from 6 to 8 p.m. or 18 to 2000. Cost is $5 for members and $20 for non-members. Great range, good people, under new management. Last but not least, C4 Training Group is hosting the Active Self-Protection Skills Summit here in Fairbanks. That's going to be June 20th and 21st. It's an exclusive immersive training event that is designed to sharpen your defensive skills using ASP's evidence-based techniques. Experience two transformative days of professional instruction tailored for real-world self-defense scenarios. The instructors will be Neil Widener and Chris Bean. Go to our website course calendar to get the link to sign up or go directly to activeselfprotection.com/shop to sign up. And again, another thing that we always talk about is like, it's a really worthwhile class. You have some great, great people who have put in thousands and thousands of hours reviewing thousands and thousands of self-defense shootings, police involved, self-defense, just so much data and statistical studying that goes into this sort of stuff. It really is worth it. I would highly recommend if you haven't signed up, if we have some spots open left, go up there, sign up and take full advantage of that two-day experience. ACHP class is only $175, and our next class is the 16th and the 17th of May. All too often we hear stories of those who thought they could defend themselves only to find out from the decedent's family that they never trained. This class is held at Alaska Ammo, and we currently have, I believe we have one ticket left. We may be sold out. So if you are interested, go ahead and check it out. If we are sold out, go ahead and sign up for the following months. And finally, C4 Training Group will be offering their Carbine for Home Defense class this July 25th and 26th. On the 26th, the Defensive Carbine Level 1 course will cover basic operation, maintenance, employment, malfunction, clearance drills, and strategies for home defense with the most in common use rifle in our nation. And if you don't know what that is, that's the AR-15. What a great weapon. On July 26th, the class will go beyond basics and cover tactics and drills that will keep you and your family alive, allowing you to be an asset and not a liability. Go to c4traininggroup.com for more information and to sign up for both days of great training. All right, so we've got about 5 minutes before we go into our first break, so we'll go over this week in firearms history. As you can probably have figured out by now, I don't have anyone here with me, so I'm currently yapping right at a microphone, so bear with me. I'm just going to pretend that you guys are in the room listening and we're all having a nice grand time. So this week's in firearms history, obviously we're in midway. We're in the heart of anniversary season. 2026 is packed with big ones. America's 250th birthday, Beretta's 500th year in business, and several landmark firearm developments. So let's dive in. May 12th, 1879. It's 147 years ago this week. A young gunsmith from Ogden, Utah, walked into the patent office and changed American firearms forever. 24-year-old John Moses Browning filed his very first patent, a single-shot rifle with a falling block action. That design became the Winchester Model 1885, and it launched the career of the man many call the father of modern firearms. Browning would go on to secure more than 120 patents. His work gave us the Winchester 1894 lever gun, which is still one of the best-selling rifles ever, the Browning Automatic Rifle, the BAR, that helped win two world wars, the legendary 1911 pistol, and the high power. Almost every major category of repeating, semi-automatic, and automatic firearm owes something to designs that started with that May 1879 patent application. One inventor, one week in May, and the ripple effects are still felt on ranges and battlefields today. Fast forward to this year, 2026, we're celebrating two huge company anniversaries that bookend firearms history. First, Beretta, the world's oldest firearm manufacturer, is marking 500 years in 2026. That is a long time. Long time. It all began on October 3rd, 1526, when the Republic of Venice ordered 185 arquebus barrels. Please excuse me if I mess that up. From Bartolomeo Beretta. 5 centuries later, the same family-owned company still produces some of the most trusted sidearms and shotguns on the planet. From Beretta's Renaissance battlefields to modern special operations, Beretta's endurance is a testament to Italian craftsmanship and adaptability. Happy 500th. That's a legacy worth raising a glass or a pistol to, depending on where you live. Closer to home, America is gearing up for its 250th anniversary, and the firearms industry is honoring it in style. Companies like Federal, Barrett, Henry, and others have released special 250th commemorative rifles, ammunition, and gear. It's a reminder that the right to keep and bear arms was baked into the American story from the beginning, from the muskets at Lexington and Concord to the AR platforms and precision rifles that are employed today. Also worth noting around this time of year, the continuing influence of 19th century repeaters. Just weeks after Browning's first patent filing in 1879, the firearms world was still buzzing about lever actions and early repeaters that had proven their worth in the Civil War and on the frontier. Guns like the Spencer and Henry rifles showed soldiers and settlers that firepower in the hands of free citizens could change outcomes, a lesson that will forever resonate. And I know you guys are sitting here thinking, wow, that was a lot. That was maybe a little too much. But, you know, we got to pay homage to the people that came before us that have modernized the way we're allowed to defend ourselves now. I mean, remember, when the Second Amendment was written, right? And I know this gets misconstrued a lot, and there's a lot of times where people say, oh, it's just about muskets. It doesn't apply to things that are now. You have to remember, and we've talked about it before, you have to remember, at that time, lever-action rifles were starting to be manufactured or patents being filed. There was the development of it. They weren't widely out there, but you had things like the Gatling gun that started to get worked on. I mean, there's so many important firearms around that time. It's almost, how would I word this? you'd have to be thinking on a lower level to think that, wow, it was only for muskets, nothing was happening. The founding fathers knew firearm technology was changing. Everything was changing at that time, right? I mean, we see a big boom now in everything that we have in our day-to-day lives, whether it's space travel, whether it's commercial vehicle use, anything like that. It's constantly changing. And it was back then. It always is. There's always some sort of step forward that is being taken. So to sit there and say that, oh, no, it was only meant for a few things, just see single shot, black powder, what we'd consider now relics, that's not the case. There was advancements being made in every part of the world, in every town. I mean, it was constant. So it applies to now, it applies to then, that right to bear arms is as important as it ever has been. And I only believe it's going to get more important. But we are going to go into our first break. When we come back, we're going to talk about a few things. We're going to talk about our beloved United States and the right to bear arms. And we're also going to discuss some World War I and modern infantry squad gear uses, the weights, and all that good stuff. So stay tuned here with Shooter's Corner with, well, Matt today. And we'll be right back.
Trim Design has it all, from radios, speakers, amplifiers, moose lights, running boards, and step bars, to WeatherTech floor liners and mud flaps. And don't forget about the CompuStar remote starts, Arctic polyurea spray and bed liners, back racks, and ladder racks. Auto Trim Design also has Lear and ARE toppers and smart caps. All this and more at Auto Trim Design under the big American flag.
Customized by Auto Trim Design.
What does it look like when your faithful friend in the driveway has an off day? Well, it looks like no fun, like bumming a ride to work, the store, rescheduling lunch with your yoga instructor, all because your four-wheeled pal is waiting for parts. We do our own routine maintenance, but our chariot depends on us to schedule that for them. Airboat and inboard service too. Family owned and operated, keeping Fairbanks on the road since 1967. Rogers Auto Repair.
KFAR weather.
Cloudy skies expected this afternoon with a slight chance of rain showers. Daytime highs approaching 50. East winds around 5 miles per hour. Cloudy again tonight. Slight chance for mixed precipitation. Lows dip down to about 33. Chance for mixed precipitation changing to all rain tomorrow. High temperatures reach up to 52. Overcast. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley.
And now back to Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio.
Welcome back, our beloved listeners. In case you missed the first part of the show, we just went over firearms history and talked a little bit about why the Second Amendment is important and ever-growing. If you'd like to call in at any point and discuss something, have any questions, comments, or just want to get something off your chest in a polite manner, go ahead and call 458-TALK. 458-TALK or 458-8255. And like I said before, you can live stream the show at kfarradio.com or on our app. You can just click the orange ball. You can also go in there and dig into the archives and see all the stuff that we've done in the past. Oh, it looks like we do have a caller. Let's get this caller on. Caller, you should be on with Shooter's Corner and Matt.
Hey, Browning wasn't really the first guy with a fallen block, but there's a If you could look up a name, Farquharson, F-A-R-Q-U-H-A-R-S-O-N, 1872. That was a hammerless, awesome design there on that falling block rifle. And these falling block rifles aren't anything to sneeze at. They're a awesome firearm.
You said and the name was Farquharson or Farquharson?
Farquharson.
Farquharson.
Marlin built a falling block version from Ballard's invention in 1861. I think Sharps had one. There's a guy from Norwegian from his name Comblain, I think. Com something. Anyway, it's a Burkhart patent, I think. I remember that name Burkhart too, but there's a lot of versions of that falling block. That's my main point. Thanks, man.
No, that's awesome. I appreciate it. I like to learn, and I like to learn something new every day. So, yeah, I appreciate you having you calling in. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
All right. Wow. As I said it, that's awesome. All right. So let's get into our editorial for today. Ladies and gentlemen of our beloved free United States, thank you for being here today. We gather not in fear, but in defense of a fundamental American principle, the right of free citizens to keep and bear arms. This right is not some dusty relic or dangerous privilege. It is a cornerstone of our liberty rooted in history, practical necessity, and the very character of our republic. Today, I want to explain why it remains essential that American citizens stay armed. First, let us remember our foundations. The Second Amendment states clearly, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Founding fathers understood something profound. They had just fought a revolution against a tyrannical government that tried to disarm them. Patrick Henry declared, "The great object is that every man be armed." Samuel Adams called the right to bear arms the palladium of the liberties of a republic, a strong moral check against a usurpation of power. James Madison in Federalist Number 46 reminded us that an armed populace serves as a natural defense against both foreign threats and domestic overreach. The founders did not trust standing armies alone. They trusted an armed citizenry, the ultimate safeguard of freedom. This was not abstract theory. It was born from bitter experience. Governments that disarm their own people often follow with oppression. History shows this pattern repeatedly, from ancient times to the 20th century. An armed people deter tyranny before it takes root. Second, the right to arms is the ultimate expression of self-reliance and personal responsibility. In a free society, the primary responsibility for protecting yourself, your family, and your community rests with you, not with distant authorities. Police are essential, but they cannot be everywhere at once. When seconds count, help is minutes away. And one thing I wanted to say on that is we've all heard Chuck talk about his experience with having to figure out what the fuel cutoff limit is for his cruiser years ago, you know, having to fly down the freeway to stop what could have been a potential active shooter scenario, which thankfully it wasn't. But the police are not always going to be there. It's up to you to defend yourself. This is not speculation. Studies have long estimated hundreds of thousands to over 2 million defensive gun uses per year in the United States. Even conservative analyses from sources like the National Crime Victimization Survey put the figure around 60,000 to 100,000 annually, often without a shot fired. These are cases where law-abiding citizens deter or stop criminals, from home invasions to street assaults. Armed citizens have stopped would-be mass shooters in places like the Greenwood Park Mall in Indiana. Responsible gun owners routinely protect lives without making headlines. Criminals do not obey gun laws. That's just it's a fact. They're not going out there and purchasing something lawfully with the intent to use it lawfully. They are going to purchase something out of a trunk of a car or off their buddy who maybe doesn't know better with ill intent. They prey on the disarmed. When good people are armed, predators think twice. Data consistently shows that violent crime rates drop in areas where law-abiding citizens carry firearms. Who would have thought? The right to self-defense is a natural right, older than any constitution. Disarming peaceful citizens does not create safety, it creates victims. Third, an armed citizenry strengthens our republic against chaos and external threats. In times of natural disaster, civil unrest, or invasion, armed Americans have historically stepped up. Think of neighborhoods protecting themselves after hurricanes when government response lagged, or the militia tradition that helped win our independence. In a vast country like ours, with millions of square miles and diverse threats, relying solely on federal or state forces is absolutely unrealistic. The Second Amendment distributes power. It keeps sovereignty with the people. Critics often point to other countries with strict gun control and lower violence. But those comparisons ignore key differences: cultural enforcement, demographics, and general overall crime. Many such nations have lower overall violence even before gun laws. The U.S. has high gun ownership, roughly 120 firearms per 100 people. Yet most gun owners are responsible. Switzerland, with high private gun ownership tied to militia service, maintains very low crime rates. The issue is rarely the tool, it is the character and culture of those who wield it. Moreover, focusing only on gun deaths overlook the full picture. Defensive uses far outnumber criminal misuses in many estimates. Suicides and accidents are tragedies, but they demand better mental health care and education, not punishing millions of law-abiding owners and everyone that cares. Total homicide rates do not always correlate neatly with gun ownership across nations. Factors like poverty, family breakdown, and drug markets matter more. Fourth, keeping Americans armed preserves the balance of power that defines our exceptional system. The Constitution is not a suicide pact. It assumes a virtuous, capable people. When citizens retain the means to resist, governments remain accountable. This does not mean constant rebellion. It means deterrence. Tyranny rarely announces itself with tanks on day one. It creeps in through eroded rights, starting often with disarmament. We see this warning in history. Regimes that first registered, then restricted, then confiscated firearms before consolidating control. Our founders study this. They gave us the tools to remain free. Finally, this right fosters a culture of responsibility, discipline, and courage. Gun ownership in America involves training, safety, and community. Millions of Americans hunt, compete, and protect their homes responsibly. It teaches respect for life and consequences. It reminds us that freedom requires vigilance. Of course, no right is absolute. We have laws against felons, mentally ill, and irresponsible use. We can debate background checks, training, and enforcement without gutting the core right. But the solution to crime is not disarming the innocent. It is prosecuting criminals swiftly, securing schools, addressing root causes, and empowering good, rule, law-abiding, free people. Fellow citizens, the question is not whether Americans should be armed. The question is whether we trust ourselves with liberty. The founders did. They bet a republic on it. In an uncertain world with rising crime in some cities, geopolitical tensions, and ever-present human nature, that bet remains wise. Let us defend this right not with anger, but with reason, history, and resolve. I'll say that again. Let us defend this right, not with anger, but with reason, history, and resolve. You have to teach your children responsibility. Support safe, lawful ownership, which, in all things considered, that's owning a firearm and being a normal person, not going out there and meaning harm on everyone you meet. Reject fear-driven policies that erode our freedoms. An armed America is a free America, secure in its homes, strong in its communities, and vigilant against anyone who would enslave it, foreign or domestic. Well, that's my speech. It's one thing to always talk about how much the U.S. citizen has to follow and has to do and all this sort of stuff. But it's another thing that there's an unspoken rule, especially with gun ownership, but in general to freedom-loving Americans. No, it is not your responsibility to go out and become a vigilante. No, it is not your responsibility to go out and protect anyone who is being harmed. But it is your responsibility as an American to protect yourself and to protect your land. It is your responsibility to go to the voting polls and vote things out that don't make sense, that are harming the community, that are doing more bad than good. It does not make sense that we allow this to continue and do nothing about it. We can scream all day on Facebook, we can go on social media and yell into the sky as much as we want, but that's not getting anything done. You have to go and vote. You have to poll. You have to go out. You use your First Amendment right. Go ahead and set up something that you're showing that you dislike what's going on. We see it all happen all the time by, what is that, Gaffney Gate over by Fort Wainwright. People are protesting constantly. They're protesting what they believe in. Believing in the left side of the spectrum or the right side of the spectrum. They're protesting in something and they're doing it. And if you're sitting there thinking, oh, that's stupid. Oh, that's dumb. I would never do such a thing. Well, you're wrong. You have to go out, or because you don't want to push any farther against what you believe is oppression, then you are already adding to the factor that we are getting our rights choked and neutered at every possible corner. It does not make sense for you to sit by and wait. You have to go out, you have to be proactive, and you have to let your voice be heard in a positive manner. Don't go out there with your rifle in your hand and thinking that you're going to change the world. Go out there and try to make a difference for your community and for your state. We'll be right back after this break here on Shooter's Corner with Matt at KFAR Radio.
Broadcasting from the Satellite West Studio, you're listening to KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM.
I'm John Saucier. Iran says they've created the Persian Gulf Strait Authority. They'll charge tolls for international ships trying to use the Strait of Hormuz. At the United Nations, U.S. Ambassador to the UN, Mike Waltz, says this is an attempt to punish the entire world.
Collective punishment of the entire world to try to resolve some type of dispute. It's unacceptable, it's immoral, and it's illegal in international law.
There are some concerns out there about the potential for the spread of hantavirus from a cruise ship after more than 24 passengers left without contact tracing. World Health Organization Director General Dr. Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus says the 8 reported cases so far may not be the last.
Given the incubation period of the Andes virus, which can be up to 6 weeks, it's possible that more cases may be reported.
At least 3 passengers on that ship died from the hantavirus. America's listening to Fox News.
It's time for your Alaska News Minute.
It's an unforgettable image, a red-colored handprint symbolically placed over a person's mouth, silencing their story and suppressing justice. The iconic illustration depicts a horrific truth in Alaska. Men and women from Alaska Native communities face higher rates of domestic and sexual violence than other populations, according to data reviewed by the Department of Justice. Alaska's news source reports on Tuesday, Senators Dan Sullivan and Lisa Murkowski were joined by the Assistant Secretary for Indian Affairs, Billy Kirkland, to announce a new effort to reinvigorate Operation Lady Justice that was created during the first Trump administration, led then by Assistant Secretary Tara Sweeney. The focus then and now was to enhance the operation of the criminal justice system and address the concerns of communities regarding missing and murdered people, particularly missing and murdered women and girls. So what has changed since 2020 and has the situation improved? Senator Sullivan said, "I think there's significant progress, but we have a long way to go, and I think this is a call to action today."
Online at KFAR660.com.
What does it look like when your faithful friend in the driveway has an off day? Well, it looks like no fun, like bumming a ride to work, the store, rescheduling lunch with your yoga instructor, all because your four-wheeled pal is waiting for parts. We do our own routine maintenance, but our chariot depends on us to schedule that for them. Airboat and inboard service too. Family owned and operated. Keeping Fairbanks on the road since 1967. Rogers Auto Repair.
It's that time of year again. The sun is out, roads are clear, and gravel is everywhere. At Auto Trim Design, we have you covered. With our self-healing paint protection film, keeping your paint looking showroom new and defending from rock chips and scratches, helping your car stay flawless for years. With our ceramic window tint, not only will it add a stylish look, it also provides protection from harmful UV rays, reduces glare, blocks heat, and increases privacy. From exterior protection to interior comfort, Auto Trim Design has you covered. Stop by or give us a call to get your vehicle ready for summer in Alaska.
And now back to Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio.
Welcome back, listeners. We just got done talking about why it is important for Americans to own their firearms, why it's important to practice your God-given rights. And when I say practice it, again, like I said before we went on to the break, don't go over the top with it. Obviously, if you have to think, is what I'm about to do the right thing, you already know it's wrong. I use that all the time. I use it every single day. If I have to think, is what I'm about to do the right thing? Nope. Incorrect. I go with my gut. And if my gut is telling me this doesn't feel right, go away with it. So when it comes to practicing your God-given rights, if you have to think, is what I'm about to do the right thing? It's probably not. Anywho, let's see. Has the temperature gone up? We've gone up 1 degree. It is 41 degrees here in Fairbanks. Oh, as I'm getting a text in from Mr. Chuck, I guess that's good. I missed out on that. But yeah, don't forget Mother's Day is this coming Sunday. I forgot. Oof. Thank you, Chuck, for reminding me. That would have been bad. But make sure that you are getting your wife or your mother or whomever, your beloved one that you feel deserves something on Mother's Day. Make sure you understand that, you know, you got to get something for them. They're doing a lot. Whether you disagree with them, whether you don't really have the best relationship, you know, they birthed you or they birthed your loved ones. Go ahead and give them something. And if you don't have a mom in the picture, you have a mom figure in your life, get her something. It doesn't have to be extravagant. Could be a card, some roses, you know, whatever, but get her something. And if you really love your mother or your wife and you've got children, whatever, you could get her a firearm. Unless you guys are not in a great place, maybe don't. Yeah, it's important that you go and help. And it, as we talk about it, getting our freedoms and liberties secured with force, you know, wanting to train your loved ones outside of yourself is one of the best things you can do. And going and picking them up something that they're comfortable with, that you feel like they can put a good foundation down and build upon that, is extremely important. So look at getting your loved one a pistol. Look at getting them a rifle and go from there. Sign up for classes wherever you can. Probably c4traininggroup.com. You know, go ahead and become better. You're not the best. No one's the best. I'm not the best. Chuck's not the best. I know he'd like to believe that. Sorry, Chuck. Chuck's great. But we're constantly training. We're constantly trying to improve. We're constantly trying to do the right thing. So it's on you as a freedom-loving American to continue to be better. There's that old adage that I would hear all the time in the Army is the, you know, while you're sitting around doing nothing, the enemy's training to kill you, as in layman's terms. They're trying to outpace you. And you should have the mindset of, if anything has to happen or if anything does happen, I want to be able to outmaneuver, outshoot, outperform whatever my adversary is. Right, someone breaks into my house, I don't want to just give up. I think Canada or maybe Britain just said, leave your keys by the front door, let them take it. It's stupid. You know, it's your responsibility as an armed citizen to train, to continue to train, to study, to dry fire, to practice, to do all that sort of stuff. Get into other aspects of the hobby, get into shooting competitions, go ahead and tweak what you can, listen to some seminars, you know, whatever. Vet your instructors and continue to train. That is extremely important, extremely important. But you can't do really any of that without the basic building block, which is having the firearm to do so. But all right, that's our Mother's Day reminder for this coming Sunday. So today's topic, we will be discussing World War I versus modernized infantry gear or their kit or whatever they're carrying. Because this is one aspect I really like to look back on, especially with, you know, in the gun culture, as much as I hate to say that, things changed all the time. People are trying to rapidly modernize something, and then it happens, people pick it up, and then a few years later, it just comes full circle back to what it was before, and it's constantly happening. And the biggest, I think one of the biggest things with that, outside of foundational training, is what you're wearing, what's being used. There was a long, long, long time where if you were wearing, you know, a plate carrier or a helmet or anything like that, you were just called a LARPer, which is live action role play for people that don't know what LARP means, or cosplaying, or you were just pretending to be someone that you weren't. And I think there's a reason behind why certain things were being said like that. I think at a certain point in time, people didn't think that it was necessary for you to have body armor. They didn't believe that it was necessary for you to have, you know, whatever most people have now. Even communications, like, you know, I have my radios. I'm not going to be talking to the ISS, but I do have a community, and we all have radio channels, frequencies, and all that. And it's just in the small chance that something goes down, we have the ability to communicate without really worrying about the reliance on modern technology. So analog radios and stuff like that. Same thing comes with body armor. People didn't want other people wear body armor because, oh, you look like a cop. And then I believe COVID is really when we saw the civilian industry get a boom in body armor purchases, plate purchases, helmet purchases, all that, because the world seemed like it was turning on its head and going in a direction that we didn't want to. And I think people really started to hone in on, like, wow, just having a rifle is not going to cut it. Having the skills to use the rifle is amazing and perfect and everything you could need, but you have to have more. You have to be able to equip yourself. You can't sustain something, right? Again, in the eyes of what was going on at that point and the ever looming fear that the world was just going to end on a Saturday. But not having certain things wouldn't really help. Now, not saying purchasing all this stuff is going to make you John Wick, Chris Kyle, or anything like that, but getting the foundational training in, knowing how to use that stuff, knowing how to implement it, purchasing the right stuff, not just purchasing whatever has a positive Amazon review, you know, is extremely important. So I like to break that down with looking into more or less the aspects of what we're using in World War I and then comparing it to what we have now and seeing the advances of everything. So in World War I, a U.S. infantry squad, which is typically about 12 men, was composed mostly of riflemen with very similar loads. Specialists, automatic rifle gunners with Shawshats or late war BARs, grenadiers, all that sort of stuff, carried heavier or swapped items around. The M1910 webbing system was a major improvement over earlier gear, light canvas, web-distributed weight systems that were better than leather, right? So there was an advancement there. Early arrivals used British and French items, but by mid-1918, most had full U.S. M1910 and M1917 helmets and U.S.-made or British-style small-box respirators. So going into a gas mask that were being carried, because Chuck and I talked about this last week, or I think the week before. We were using trench guns. The Germans were using gas, and they didn't like our trench guns. We didn't like their gas. So you have to be able to protect yourself. The rifles that were being used was usually the M1970 Enfield, heavier but produced in huge numbers, roughly 75% of all the Doughboys, as well as the M1903 Springfield. There was a large pack often left behind in fighting order for assaults, right? So when you're assaulting a forward position or you're having to do any sort of movement, you don't want to be completely weighed down. And at that time, you know, they weren't used to carrying heavier stuff. Historically speaking, the warfighters back then, I believe their average height was 5'6". So they're smaller, slim framed, weren't eating a lot. So everything was pretty light back then. There also weren't certain advancements that we have now. But from U.S. Army specs, reconstructions, and period descriptions, the base M1910, which was the specialist load, including rifle and ammo, was about 48 to 50 pounds. Full marching order with helmet, gas mask, full pack, and typical extras brought them up to about 60 to 70 pounds per soldier. This was extremely burdensome in mud and heat, but better balanced than many Allied loads. So breaking it down a little more before we get into the our last break, clothing and personal items typically weighed around 12 to 14 pounds. Back then, you were using olive drab wool shirts, trousers, some sort of service coat. You had thicker socks, some sort of legging to keep you warm underneath, trench shoes or boots, suspenders, overseas cap or campaign hats. And then you had your dog tags, paybook, pocket knife, first aid, you know, whatever you could carry in your pocket. So roughly you were weighing about 12 to 14 pounds. With weapons and ammunition, you were looking about 17 to 19 pounds, which, again, like we spoke about before, the 1917 Enfield rifle with sling, oil, and pull-through was about 9.2 pounds. The 1903 Springfield, which was an alternative at the time, was weighing in roughly about 8.5 pounds. You had a bayonet, wow, bayonet and scabbard, and you've got about 1.1 pounds added. And then you have 120 rounds of .30-06 ammunition and stripper clips, which is usually carried in those 1910 belt pouches. And those were 5-round stripper clips. So that, all said, was another 7 pounds. And then your tools, you had about roughly 2 pounds of tools on you. You had the M1910 entrenching tool with a T-handle shovel and a canvas carrier. Accoutrements and web equipment, really quick. Again, like we said before, suspenders, braces, canteen pouch, canteens, canteen covers. Then you had your pack, your meat can pouch, because they didn't have MREs like we have now. So you're adding another 6 to 8 pounds in total. But we will continue with the World War I versus modernized times infantry squad loadouts after this break.
Hey Fairbanks, Brian from Auto Trim Design. Now's the perfect time to get your work trucks set up right. From toppers, back racks, beacons, running board seat covers, floor liners, bed slides, ladder racks, and so much more. Auto Trim Design has everything you need to tackle any job. Our commercial toppers keep your equipment and tools secure and out of the elements. Need to keep your bed organized? Add a deck drawer system to easily access all your gear. Contact Auto Trim Design for your professional truck grade accessories today.
Customized by Auto Trim.
Whether you're flying or boating into your favorite fishing hole or just driving to the lake, make Frontier Outfitters your first stop for all the fishing gear, licenses, permits, and stamps you'll need. Frontier's extensive fishing department has the conventional, fly, or saltwater tackle for every game fish in Alaska's streams, rivers, lakes, and ocean habitats. Rods and reels, lures and natural bait, lines and nets, dip netting supplies, even sunglasses. Frontier Outfitters has what you need for your successful trip, plus marine parts and equipment downstairs at Century Hardware. Frontier Outfitters, for your Alaskan lifestyle.
KFAR weather.
Overcast skies today with a slight chance for showers. High of 50, northeast winds around 5 miles per hour. Overcast skies again tonight. Slight chance for mixed precipitation, 33. Chance for mixed precipitation changing to all rain tomorrow, 52. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki.
And now back to Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio.
Welcome back, listeners. That was our last break. We got a final push of about 14 minutes here. So we'll continue the rest of the World War I loadout and what they were carrying and then get into the modernized stuff. So leaving off, we talked about what kind of weapon they were carrying, all the actual clothing, what gear. But then there were some extras that add on to that weight. So another 10 to 14 pounds consisted of a shelter half tent, poles, and pegs. You also had your wool blanket, or more than often two, depending on the time of year. You had your mess kit, which was that meat can. You had a pan, cover plate, knife, fork, and spoon. You had spare socks, underwear, towel, soap, toiletries of any nature, and then sewing kits usually. Personal items as well would be carried on them, which I think that goes without saying. But, you know, you have letters, photos, religious necklaces, bracelets, stuff like that. So there's that saying, ounces equal pounds, and it really does start to add up when you start carrying stuff that you don't need. I'm not saying you don't need to carry a photo of your wife, but there are certain things you can leave behind that you won't need. You also get into the water and rations was about 5 to 6 pounds. And then additional items, the helmets, that Doughboy helmet we were talking about is roughly 2.5 pounds, which wasn't carried by everyone or worn by everyone. So those personnel that did have it, it was an extra few pounds. Your gas mask was roughly 3 to 4 pounds, and then some sort of a poncho or sheet, plus extra ammo and bandoliers, wire cutters, grenades, you know, because they were working through trenches, they were working through barbed wire. So they had to get through all that stuff. So overall, you have 48 to 50 pounds as a marching order. So that's your rifle, ammo, and basic gear. With everything else, helmet, gas mask, full pack, all your extras, you're looking at roughly 70 pounds and up. Some variations in that obviously are NCOs and officers carrying pistols and extra magazines instead of their full rifle ammo. So they do lose a few pounds there, but they are carrying other things. So it does start to get heavier. And then you get into automatic rifle teams. You're adding about 16 to 19 pounds there. All right. So flip-flopping over, we got World War One. You're roughly 70 pounds with everything going into it. Switching over to today, most riflemen in today's modern fighting era is a 9 to 11 man squad carrying similar baseline loads. You have your machine gunners usually carrying the M249 or M240, and then or now the M250. You have your javelins, which are a fire and forget system for locking onto vehicles. It's a missile system. It's pretty cool. You have your RTOs. Those are your radio guys. Those dudes just hate their lives. They're just sucking, carrying a bunch of radios and having to run back and forth. And they can, everyone together can swap around items, but for the most part, you're in a dedicated role. So you have a dedicated system already on you, and it just gets heavy. Army uses modern modular systems like the IOTV, which is the improved outer tactical vest, or lighter plate carriers like the Cry JPC, Cry ABS, LBT 6094. You also are wearing a few different helmet styles out there. For one, the most standard issue was the Advanced Combat Helmet, or the ACH, which now we have the ECH. And then you have the M4 Carbine, with them transitioning over to the M7 in units in a few years, the entirety of the Army, unless they choose a better weapon, because I have strong negative opinions about the M7. But your loads are categorized as a fighting load. That was typically going to be around 40 to 60 pounds. And then you have your marching load or your movement load, adding your rucks for movement, often your A and B bags, which are these big duffel bags full of extra stuff that 90% of the time you're forced to bring and you do not need. But doctrine aims for fighting load of approximately 30% or less of your body weight, which is roughly 55 pounds for the 170 to 180 pound soldier. And then your movement load, your going to battle load, is roughly about 45% of that overall body weight. But one thing that gets left out doctrinally is they exceed this due to your armor, ammo, batteries, water, and electronics. Electronics being a big one in that, and the batteries to carry really add on to it. But, you know, your weights are, it's an approximate thing. It's all based off of how you're built, how tall you are, how much you weigh, and again, that sort of position. So I'm about 215 to 225. I'm 6'4". So I had a large plate carrier, so my sappies were a few pounds heavier than most people's, which that, you know, sucks, but it's proportioned accurately to me. But, you know, it all varies by size, accessories, your water fill, and then whatever the mission is. Like Chuck says, and I've said a lot, mission dictates gear, mission dictates kit. You know, not everything is cookie cuttered, so you have to adjust depending on what's going on. But going into the details, your clothing and personal items, what's worn is roughly 8 to 12 pounds alone. So you have your combat uniform, which is your OCPs or your FRACUs, depending. You have your boots, socks, undershirt, belt, gloves, and for some reason, your patrol cap, which is your PC, your little hat, can be carried, but usually you just leave that somewhere and try to forget about it. You'll also be carrying on you your ballistic iPro. You'll also have hearing protection, dog tags. Most people wear a watch, and then you have note-taking materials. So that adds up to about 1 to 5 pounds, depending on what you're wearing. Most of that goes into the ear protection side of things. If I'm wearing Peltors, I'm going to have more weight. If I just have the in-ears, little foamies, I'm not adding much, but then I don't get situational awareness. Going more into it, your body armor and your helmet, you're adding right there alone, just with your IOTV, just the actual fabric and the plates, roughly 25 to 30 pounds. And then you add your ACH was anywhere to 2.5 to 3 pounds, depending. So you're roughly 30 to 37 pounds, depending on how big everything is. And then once you add in soft armor and side plates on the IOTV, you're adding another 10 pounds to your overall. So right there, you're sitting at about 50, just clothing and then what you're wearing on top of you. Then you start getting into other things. Weapons and ammunition can range anywhere from about 15 to 30 pounds. So if you're a normal guy or you're in some sort of leadership position, you'd be carrying an M4. You'll have an optic, usually an ACOG or an M150. you'll have a red dot, again, depending. All these things start to add up. You have your PEC-15, which is your laser and illuminator, your light grip, suppressors, which aren't as common, but they are becoming more common with the switch over to M7, the M7 rifle. But you're looking at 8 to 10 pounds just in the rifle itself. Then you have 7 to 8 30-round magazines at combat loads, so 210 to 240 rounds. That's, again, 7 to 9 pounds. Bayonets aren't really issued anymore, but some people still get them. Usually you'll have a multi-tool instead. Then you add your IFAC and your grenades, you're adding another 8 pounds. Then you go over to your load fighting equipment, which is another 5 to 15 pounds. You know, and again, I'm going through all this just to give you distinct clarification between the two, which what they were carrying now versus how heavy things get, or excuse me, what they were carrying in World War One versus how heavy things have gotten now. And then just letting you know, you can dictate what you want to purchase or what you want to wear based off of what you're seeing or what is going to fit your use case, right? And not everything, like I said before, not everything is cookie cutter, plain and simple. You, as the normal armed citizen, more than likely aren't going to have to do a 20-mile movement under night vision at night. So you may not need 90% of the stuff that we're talking about here. But it's a good idea to get your brain juices churning, thinking about what you could purchase or how you can better see fit a way to defend yourself. But your modular lightweight load-carrying equipment, so your Molly pouches, depending if you're wearing a battle belt or some sort of harness system, it's about 3 to 6 pounds empty. You'll have your E-tool with your ruck, and then again, flashlight, multi-tool, blah, 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 all that stuff. Comms and equipment, roughly another 8 pounds with your night vision. Usually you'll have PVS-14s, which is a monocle device, or you'll have PVS-31s, PSQ-20s, you know, whatever. That's 1 to 8 pounds, depending on the loadout. And then your radios, just a radio alone is probably 3 to 4 pounds, and then all the batteries to maintain them for 72 hours without sustainment, you're looking at another 20 pounds. Rations water, you're looking at your Camelback, which is a back water holder. It's going to add roughly 6 to 10 pounds, depending on how much water you have in there, or you're carrying 2 to 3, quart canteens. You'll have your MREs, which are field stripped. You take out all the stuff you don't need. You just leave the main meal, and maybe a snack for short, energy bursts. That's another 2.5 pounds. And then you'll have spare socks, hygiene, poncho lighter, blah, 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 all that stuff. So again, you're looking at 45 to 70 pounds with just a fighting load. And then you are looking at 55 pounds to, in some cases, 110 pounds, depending on your position and everything when you're going into an engagement or you're getting to somewhere. So that's a lot, and there's a huge comparison. Now, you can look at what people are wearing now. A lot of people have switched over to predominantly chest rigs and then wearing some sort of plate carrier underneath that's slick. It's more, people say it's a gray man thing. It's a little more hidden, but it just holds the plates. You can throw the chest rig on top of it. It's very low profile. You don't need soft armor, side plates, and all that sort of stuff. Realistically, if you do, you're in a really bad predicament, and you don't have the support system to sustain that fight anyway. So you want to be able to keep light enough that you can move around, and you can try to outmaneuver some adversary, but at the same time, you also want to be able to protect your vital organs. Even if you don't want to wear a ballistic helmet, you can always wear a bump helmet. That way, if you take a nasty spill, you don't split your skull open, and then now you're just useless. But, you know, that's your standard baseline loads. Again, we always talk about mission dictates kit, mission dictates gear, which is just a METTC thing, which METTC is mission, enemy, terrain, troops, time, and civilians. Those are all the things that you consider before going into something. And you can use that on your day-to-day life. You can have a standard set of stuff that you carry, so your concealed carry stuff, maybe an extra magazine, your tourniquet, some light medical, your phone, wallet. That's all your day-to-day stuff that you, generally speaking, have a overall well-balanced use case for. And then you can get into your specifics. What do I want to have for home defense? What does that look like? Chuck and I talked about it. 99% of the time, you're not going to have time to put on a helmet, nods, plate carrier, all that. So what am I having there? And then do you have something for, you know, your SHTF scenario when poop hits the fan, you know, something could happen, which likely it wouldn't, but an invasion of some sorts, having something to sustain that, right? And this is all getting to the point of you need to be able to look across what you have now, figure out what is working, what isn't. Maybe you bought something that was super cheap, you've used it a few times, you could sell that and then sell a few things and get something that's a little more worthwhile, right? If you have 10 Palmetto State rifles and you shoot one of them, Maybe sell the other ones, get a better optic. Don't just rely on your iron sights and stuff like that. So yeah, so and that kind of will all be led into our carbine class in July. We'll talk about what we're wearing, the reasons we're using it, how to use it. We'll help the students figure out what they're using and how they're using it as well. Maybe they're having some hiccups, or maybe they want to try some stuff out. So all across the board, we're there to help. So bring what you got, bring what you can, and you know, we will make the best of you that we can. And it's just on you to continue your training and to continue your foundational skills and building. But thank you for tuning into Shooter's Corner here at KFAR Radio. I hope you guys have a blessed day. Stay American and stay free.
You've been listening to Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio. Brought to you by Price RV, Auto Trim Design, by Rogers Auto Repair, and by Frontier Outfitters. To listen back to this or any past episode, log on to KFARradio.com and click on the archive page. And thanks for listening.
News and conversation.